This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
That's right, you're with Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Brian Andy here, and this week I'm flying solo. It's Cup Day, and because Emma Moffat's been so wonderful working hard while I've been absent from the studios, I thought I'd take over this week, give her a rest so she can be out there drinking champagne and eating chicken, as you do on Cup Day. This week it's a pretty exciting show. We've got Mark Shepherd, who is a Murray fella from up Queensland. He's from far north Queensland, and he joins me in the studio this week to chat about a show called Corked Up that Circus Oz is presenting this week down at the Melbourne Spiegel Tent. Mark is an amazing performer. He's written and presented his own play called Chasing the Lolly Man, and I met him a few years ago when he was in town presenting that at La Mama. But yeah, he's a good mate of mine, and so this week's Lefty Pinko is going to be pretty special in the sense that we'll hear from Mark, his background. He's got a fascinating life. He's a very talented performer who gets involved with acting. He's very funny. He's a comedian. He's a writer. He's also a bit of a clown, and we'll talk about that and how he's used those skills with circus. And he'll probably celebrate those very skills as part of the Circus Oz Corked Up program that's being presented this week. You're with Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, Lefty Pinkos. It's Brian here, and that was Microwave Jenny with Stuck on the Moon. And as mentioned before, we're joined in the studio by Mark Shepherd, who is an Aboriginal Murray lad, a performer, an actor, a playwright, a circus performer. He's also a bit of a clown too, and but yeah, I just want to say thanks for joining us today here, Mark.
Pleasure, pleasure.
I guess, yeah, why did you pick Microwave Jenny? What's so special about those guys?
Oh, I first saw those two guys perform up at Woodford Folk Festival, and then I think I started stalking them from there. Amazing voices and talent, incredible talent between the both of them, and their movement through music, I think, is something that you cannot help but be affected by.
Yeah, no, they're pretty amazing, aren't they? From New South Wales. And I called you a Murray in those intro notes. And I guess for those listeners out there that might not know what the term Murray is, can you just explain what that is?
Yeah, Bummer Murray. Bummer meaning from up Caranda, far north Queensland area, Mariba, Caranda. Murray is kind of a general term, I suppose, which kind of indicates that I'm from Queensland. It will, you know, you can kind of go into those communities around Queensland, you know, the question is, are you Murray? Down here, I kind of get, are you Koori?
Mm-hmm.
I go, nah, I'm Murray fella from far north Queensland. That will, you know, say a lot more about where I'm from, particularly speech, different speech patterns and stuff as well that kind of is able to be, to define, particularly amongst our own mob, where you're from.
Yeah. And I guess who is your mob then? Where you're from? And
mob is Mullaridgee and Mbabram crew from up in the Atherton Tablelands. Mbabram is further up around Tolga area, I believe, further up into the Atherton Tablelands. And Mullaridgee is from around Mariba, extending to some parts down towards the back way around to Mossman, Mount Carbine. And then it's a little bit further, west, I suppose. But, yeah, mainly Mariba area.
I guess, and I've never been up that way, but, like, what sort of landscape is it? It's mountainous?
It is mountainous. Mariba is more situated on plateau.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of a bit more drier country, but you still get your rainfalls because it's surrounded by Caranda. The further up northwest you go into the Tablelands, the kind of more rainforest area, you'll get there as well. And Mariba's kind of fortunate that it's where it's situated is on Mariba itself, meaning meeting of two waters.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the Granite Creek and Barron River all meeting at a junction point there, just around the corner from where I actually grew up there as well. So there's that connectedness of growing up there, but also connectedness of that's my mob and that's part of the story of my mob there as well.
The first time I ever met you, it was in Melbourne. You were presenting a show called Chasing the Lolly Man, It was at La Mama.
Yeah.
It was many. How many years ago was that actually?
I think that would have been about 3 years ago. Yeah. Maybe four. Been a bit years now.
Yeah. Can you tell our listeners what, I guess, because, it was an amazing piece of theatre. Like, I remember it was a one-man show, just to give people a bit of a context, and it was called Chasing the Lolly Man, and it was about all these different themes that came together, like your Aboriginality, growing up in Queensland, your homosexuality, your gay identity.
Yep.
But do you want to just tell our listeners what Chasing the Lolly Man was about and why you did it?
Yeah, Chasing the Lolly Man was a journey into a discovery of, particularly, I was doing some stand-up comedy at the time, also clowning, and then just that natural innate thing of, particularly if you go into, in my community, I can only talk for where I'm from, but, you know, I say to other friends, you know, you can come and meet my family, and I'm the quietest one of the group, which a lot of them do laugh at because I can tend to be, you know, loud, and, you know, enjoy a good laugh, but Chasing the Lolly Man was kind of a exploration of all those notions of myself, and what I thought of myself as a performer at the time, and kind of exploring those avenues of what comedy presented itself to me as an actor. Give me a script and you learn that, and then you kind of present that. Stand-up comedy is a completely different beast in itself as well, where, you know, you kind of think you might have your notes about what you come up with, your material and what you want to talk about, but then there's also room to improvise with that as well. And also I was doing some clowning work with Debase Productions, who produced the show as well, and so it was kind of the element, playing with all those elements, looking at scripting that, and then the show is a bit autobiographical as well, as you mentioned, and it's just kind of really an exposure of who I am as a performer and my journey about finding myself and a truthfulness to myself, and using comedy as a vehicle to be able to put that on some kind of stage, to then, you know, hopefully reach other particularly young, up-and-coming, aspiring performers, as well as those who are maybe already well enough established, but, you know, looking at increasing knowledge into the diversity of our Aboriginal population.
Chasing the Lolly Man, it's an interesting title because you got to tour the show nationally. You came to Melbourne, like I said, but you toured all over the place, and it was interesting because tell us about the title and the significance of that, and then I guess the connections you talk about inspiring other Aboriginal young people, but how did the title and the show connect with people on that level?
The title came about particularly as the show was first thought about, in terms of sitting in the backyard of this house I was in West End in Brisbane, and we were sitting around having a glass of wine or two, and just sharing stories with our housemates, and this story about the Chasing the Lolly Man kind of came out of this conversation, and it was about community coming together, community from Mariba, from Coranda, Mossman, some from Cairns, possibly on a Sunday day where there was sports going on, baseball, softball, touch football, rugby league, and then the Lolly Man would appear for the younger kids, dressed in a hessian sack with lolly bags made up and kind of attached to this hessian sack, and probably be one of the local, you know, footballers who had enough stamina and energy to be able to run away from all these screaming kids. But there was one of the stories, but then the notion of what Chasing the Lolly Man to me, and still is to me, was that very fact that it was a day of just coming together and being, you know, expanding that notion of community and what brings us together. You know, there was no internet back then either, and you didn't necessarily, like, you could Google Lolly Man. I'm not sure you should try that at home, by the way, because you might find something you don't necessarily want to see. So I guess the exploration of that notion of what is it that brings us together as communities, and that, you know, when that notion is still carried, that tradition of that is still passed down, whether it is Sunday dinners or, but it wasn't just about, you know, just your family members that you're related to by blood, but there was also what we call uncles, aunties that we're not necessarily even related to, but that thing of extended family, you know, and does then that then becomes family, and it was an exploration of that as well.
With your life, you've had, a religious influence, particularly I've heard you talk about it with your performance. And what role does the church, or has the church played in, I guess, your performance and your expressions?
Yeah, well, I think the, just from, you know, memory as well, I think particularly for me, the church, for one, I remember seeing an amazing preacher, pastor, he came from the States. We were at some church camp. This was Seventh-day Adventist is what I was kind of grown up with that, as well as a few other churches. I used to go to church on Saturday and Sunday.
Only because
all my family was going to different churches, and I think I really enjoyed the fellowship and, you know, the singing. Yeah, I saw this pastor once, and wow, like, I believed, you know, that I absolutely believed in this God that all these people had come together to kind of be a part of this moment. And then I was kind of going, that's incredible, particularly to be able to stand up there and deliver something so passionately that, you know, so you hear that thing about being moved by the Spirit, and I was thinking, what is being moved by the Spirit? Although I've been moved by other few spirits, like more lately than thing, but anyways, we get back to the different story altogether. But I guess what else I take from that, you know, I don't necessarily say that I'm a Christian these days, but that, you know, I can't help but be influenced by my upbringing, and you know, I do believe that there's something absolutely higher than we are, because, you know, I think one of the difficulties for me growing up as well was understanding my Aboriginality in amongst all of you know, the Christianity, the son, the nephew, you know, playing all these different roles in your life. And I think what I take from that is what I take from any kind of, I'm open to, you know, any kind of particularly religious teachings. But I think what most religions are talking about is a way of life and how you treat other people throughout your journey to wherever you may end up. But the fact that, you know, things can be, to me, it's about taking those teachings and applying them to how you live your life. I just recently moved back up to Mareeba after doing a show there in Cairns at Jute Theatre. And, you know, it was really nice. And still family going, you know, do you want to come to church? You know, and I might go to church with them on that particular day. And people going, oh, you know, you still believe in God? And I said, look, I still believe in something higher than we are. I don't necessarily think that I need to show that by having a building or you know, thing, a particular
going to church
title,
every day.
Whether it's whatever secular thing it is, Seventh Adventist, Catholic, whatever that is. But, you know, I said to them, well, you know, my God loves me for everything I am, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinkos with Brian, and Emma isn't with us this week, but I'm joined in the studio by Mark Shepherd, and we'll be back to continue our chats after these announcements.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinkos with Brian, and I'm joined in the studio by Mark Shepherd, who has requested that we play a little bit of Etana, and that was her track Reggae. Now, I've never heard that song before, but why Etana? What's so deadly about her?
Did you just hear that voice? That was amazing. I kind of discovered her. My sister put her on, has been playing her as well. And shout out to Mandy Shepherd Haces. just find her. That led me into then looking more into her music, and I love that journey when you're kind of discovering new music and new performers, and you can't help but be moved by sitting there, and they transport you to somewhere else, somewhere better, somewhere nicer.
Now, on that, and back to church, how has that given you a bit of a foundational platform for your performing nowadays?
Oh, I think particularly the no shame factor.
Yes.
I think I spent most of the time, but, you know, even with church, if we weren't playing the instruments, we were singing in the choir or by yourself, mostly by myself some of the time.
Was that through choice or through,
through choice as well, you know, kind of getting a
stage,
moment to be absolutely, to be up there and no one else with you apart from the, you know, the keyboardist or you're doing it yourself with a guitar. And yeah, it was just those moments of you know, particularly, what was that song called? My God Loves Me. I think I would have been about six or seven, and kind of getting up and delivering that song and having other people moved by that as well, kind of gave me a little awakening, I guess, to the power of, well, at that time particularly, music and lyrics and writing good lyrics that kind of people can identify with and feel some kind of emotional connection to. But there was that church, but also, then also, you know, some wasn't too much to do in terms of night clubbing or anything up there. I don't think there was. We do have four pubs in Moriba. Well, it used to be four, now it's three. You know, apart from, you know, the nightclubs, there was, you know, things, functions organised. The same thing like Lolly Man, where bands would come and play, Black Image, a few other different, I think even Yothi Indy came up there at some stage during their career as well. Kalachi Roach, you know, Coloured Stone. So we used to get all these bands coming in, but then also, and you know, no alcohol at these events or anything else. And but then they weren't coming. Then it was my uncle's bands or my other uncle's bands, and we, you know, wanting to get mob up, come up and do a harmony, come up and do a harmony, and you're kind of joining in that way. If you went up there on the stage with them, then I spent most of that time as well hiding in dark corners from the aunties that wanted to do the waltzing dances around the floor.
Oh yeah,
and they would come and seek me out too, because I guess I got no shame and I'll get up and rock it out, rock it out.
I guess I'd probably look at you as a bit of a quadruple threat. There's that triple threat suggestion around somebody that can act, sing and dance, but you actually do play instruments too. You play the guitar and you're quite musically inclined, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know about quadruple, but that sounded real deadly. I like it.
Oh, I mean, that's what I'd like to think of you, Mark, so yeah.
Thanks.
In terms of your performance, like you're an actor, you're a playwright, you're involved with circus and clowning.
Yeah, wow.
Tell me about clowning. You can have fun with it and say, oh, you know, you're just a clown, but it's actually a really dedicated performance type. But what sort of elements does one have to bring to clowning?
I think just, for me, just, you know, being able to think outside of the norm. More so for the sake of improvisation, but then, you know, different clowning techniques. I learned from Liz Gitch and Bridget Boyle, as well as some from Robert Kronk. I think they studied with Lecoq in... That sounds French. So
sounds French, French, yeah, yeah.
Sorry for my ignorance too much. I know I kind of say I'm a clown, but... You know, I think we have clowns in our own communities as well. That person at the party who has to be the life of it and always making people laugh. And, you know, that to me was uncles and stuff as well. That was a kind of, you knew when they were in the building because everyone would kind of, and then doing some kind of clowning thing because everyone would run over there for that laugh. Or upstage people and, you know, come in and that innate ability to kind of create humour, even from, you know, even from serious stuff like Sorry Business and all that kind of thing as well, where that kind of then lift spirits, I suppose. But, yeah, clowning and, you know, learning also the different techniques, different rules of clowning. There aren't too many rules of clowning, but, you know, basic rules that kind of set you the groundwork to... then give you the freedom of expression, but also freedom of movement within those rules to play the clown. And also the red nose helps quite a lot. You know, this I think is the smallest mask you can use in theatre, where it just gives you permission just to, even standing on stage, not saying anything. The eyes come alive, body movements, even subtle to over the top, you know, suddenly take on a whole another dimension of a way of expressing yourself. And also the ability to be able to, for the clown to come in and talk about serious stuff, but the audience gives you permission to do that and comes along the journey with you because they're put at ease, and that laughter is really the best medicine.
Mm-hmm. Is it your favourite performance type?
Look, being with circus, just because I finished up with Circus Oz in March this year, just finished, you know, touring with the main cast, and that was an amazing experience as well. Then I had the opportunity to get back into theatre, and I was actually given a script, and you know, playing three characters, and you know, having to learn those lines. And I love the element from all of the different types of performing genres, I suppose. But I would say it is a little fabric because it's something I can rely on that to inform my interpretation of another person's script or music or whatever that is that I can then bring, you know, because I think performing arts is a constant evolution of yourself as a person, but then as a performer, it kind of gives you more tools, I guess, to be able to come into a play or whatever thing you're trying to interpret and add some experience or no
and
experience.
And be open to the words
and really do the best thing you can do for the performing, hopefully, with a great director as well, that message is being able to be told in the best way possible.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinko's Brian here chatting to Mark Shepherd. We'll be back after these announcements.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Joy 94.9. It's Brian here on Lefty Pinko's, and I'm joined in the studio by Mark Shepherd, who has just requested another track, as is the case with Lefty Pinko's. Our guests choose the music, and that was Emma Donovan with a song I'm not going to try to pronounce, Mark, so could you please segue to the title of that track?
I think it's Gumbangia Lady.
Yeah, and why Emma Donovan?
I love her. She's absolutely incredible. As well as the type of music she puts out, she also invests a lot back into community as well. But I just admire her from head to toe and beautiful from the inside out, and I think that shows in her music.
So at her gigs, you're a bit of a groupie then?
Oh, absolutely. I've got her phone number, but I don't stalk her that bad.
You don't stalk her? Okay, no. Yeah. Shout out to Emma Donovan here on Joy 94.9. I just want to ask, because you identify as a gay man, and we spoke earlier about religion, and sometimes people will view the church or organised religion as being at odds with the acceptance of homosexuality. How have you experienced that? Has it been a problem, or has it been something that you've been able to navigate?
Growing up, it was kind of not necessarily that hard, but it was difficult in terms of, not wanting to disappoint anybody and being everything else that I thought everybody wanted me to be, rather than being true to who I am. You know, with all the different laws set up within that structure of umbrella, I suppose, of religion. You know, as I said, I've kind of chosen a good while ago now to say I accept that part of my life, and I choose to take those teachings from those times to apply to how it affects me today in regards to the way I treat other people, particularly the way I treat myself, which was most important. And, you know, I think if we are to believe in something that's particularly greater than we are, aren't we meant to take those teachings? And as much as we have a choice about everything we apply then to our own lives, why, you know, if it's love, I think, you know, particularly unconditional love and love in any sense of the word, there's no blurred lines around that word.
Have you found any challenges to your homosexuality up at home or within your community?
Oh, look, it's a lot more accepted these days. Mm-hmm. I don't hide who I am. As with also being Aboriginal, it's not necessarily that everything that I need to demonstrate by being loud and, you know, having to wear what I'm thinking is homosexual clothes or that kind of thing.
You are dressed pretty gay today, I must
thanks,
admit.
Yeah, colour coordination. You just need a bit of this and a bit of that. And it's everything about who I am, I think, too. And that's how I choose to walk through the world and to, you know, if you're thinking that your God does not want you to, you know, is against all of this thing, then I think you're praying to the wrong God.
Mm-hmm. In terms of your Aboriginality or your homosexuality, which is the most influential or the most prominent within your life or the most primary?
Yeah, I think they have their equal share about exactly who I am, because the journey of finding stuff, and particularly in the industry that I'm involved with as well, can be a little reckless at times. More so for the sake of, you feel like you're a bit schizophrenic,
yeah.
And taking on different characters and being able to play a straight man in a show, or a gay man, or being stereotyped into something. I think it's about just the acceptance of everything that entails. I'm not necessarily, I happen to think that I'm out on the scene. I'm involved with a few different groups around the place as well. Brisbane is our Garbanjalam Network, mm-hmm. which is our gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, but particularly Indigenous kind of thing, but not necessarily Indigenous only. Mm-hmm. But whilst here in Melbourne as well, coming out to a few of the Out Blacks, mm-hmm. Particularly some of the events, which are incredible, Brian, Andy.
Yes, thank you.
I really enjoy those evenings like that as well, and I think it's that in that representation of who we are, because even though, you know, there's still that discrimination against, you know, some gays and lesbians and whatnot as well, but that, you know, being Aboriginal takes the cake in terms of any kind of racism or discrimination. Well, so it's about, you know, understanding who that is and what you're picking your fights when you need to be sportsful, but also am I able to kind of do that in the way that I conduct myself in everyday life, but then also having a vehicle of being able to tell other people's stories as well as my own up on stage. And and I think that's the importance of particularly theatre. Oh, well, I'll say more so performing arts these days because of my history now in regards to every avenue that I've kind of explored in a ways of discovering who I am as a performer and what I have to offer to this craft. Because I do this every now and again as well, is that question you ask yourself, you know, is this really what you want to do? You know, should I just get a 9-to-5 and which I have had, you know, different office jobs at particular points in my life, and you know, I honestly could not answer. Well, actually, I could answer that thing, and it was yes. Because I love to do this. I wake up every day, and if I don't want to write, you know, you kind of carry a book and pen around with you, because inspiration strikes at any moment. And yeah, I can't help but be affected by that thing, and then kind of going, actually, that's maybe going to influence what I next have to offer on stage.
I'm thinking about your play, Chasing the Lolly Man, and there's, to give our listeners a bit of a sense of it, but you told this story about, I guess, growing up, your identity, and then the way you dealt with your homosexual identity was you had this little kind of cupboard or a closet, and you opened it up every now and then, and inside it was a mirror ball. Over, like, the speakers, there was this, I guess, very camp music that came on, and you had a little bit of a dance, but why did you feel the need to put that little snippet of your identity in that, and how was that received from audiences who may not have seen or celebrated homosexuality in that way?
Yeah, well, who's not affected by the mirror ball, especially with the flashing lights and good music? Yes. You know, whether you're gay or whatever, you know, think that, you know, just to be able to be moved once again by that music and kind of join in with the celebration without any kind of thought to maybe what the intention of that particular
moment. Yeah, very subtle
moment.
Yeah,
like, yeah. And so I think that was very well done, particularly by the director at the stage. The set itself was kind of set up to be, they looked like totem poles almost, but they were designed to look like those licorice all sorts with the different colours, you know, and whatnot as well, and just happened to have little cupboard things. Oh, closet
I saw it as a closet.
Absolutely. And had a few other different costume changes stuff in amongst that would lead on to different stories about, you know, that kind of happened within the show as well. But yeah, the mirror ball thing, I think it was, I love it too.
Yeah, that was a fantastic little device, and it was just subtle but effective. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinkos with Brian here, and I'm chatting to Mark Shepherd about his performing, about his art, about his writing, his clowning. He's a bit of a clown. We'll be back to chat more about his current show that he's working on with Circus Oz. It's called Corked Up, and it starts this week down at the Melba Spiegeltent.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Brian, Andy here. Emma's not with us this Tuesday because she's celebrating Cup Day, but I'm joined here by Mark Shepherd, who I've been chatting to about his performance, and He's currently working on a show with Circus Oz, and you've been involved with Circus Oz before. You actually did the last season with the company.
Yeah.
Like a show about construction, working, I guess, construction sites. It was very manly, wasn't it?
And very very manly, and I got to wear a kangaroo suit.
Ah, deadly.
Yeah.
But where'd you travel with that show? Because it went overseas too, didn't it?
Yeah, it went to US and then Montreal. We finished up in March this year from there as well, from cold country to come back to another cold country.
Yeah.
I've never seen snow before. That was
amazing. Oh, your first time, yeah. Where was that, in Montreal?
No, actually, we had a big bit of a snowstorm in Boston.
Uh-huh.
Boston, what an amazing city as well. There's some of the architecture and buildings around there. It's just, a bit older than as long as Australia's been settled.
Yeah.
So that was amazing. Cold. Understanding, you know, that process. That tour started last year. We ended up going up into Arnhem Land,
mm-hmm.
Through 2 weeks through the communities from Gumbalanya, finished up at Yirrkala and Gama Festival. And that was an incredible experience as well. Then, as well as touring nationally around Australia,
mm-hmm.
Before heading off over to US and then Montreal. Yeah, so I kind of came back and then went back into theatre, and now I'm back for 3 nights only. Yeah.
We'll get to that. Yeah, we'll get to Corked Up. But I guess I want to ask before we get there, like, I mean, do you find there's a difference between presenting a show to a community like within Arnhem Land, like, you know, predominantly Aboriginal,
yeah,
to, say, a US audience? Is there a difference between the way people react to a show? Or?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, just the way that it's kind of presented, it was a very pared back, particularly set-wise, for the shows that we took through Arnhem Land, only because travelling through there is by road.
Mm-hmm.
So during that two-week process, we, you know, the set was coming in a big truck on these sometimes dusty, a little bit hilly every now and again kind of dirt tracks.
Not sealed roads.
Not
sealed.
Wow. No sealed roads. Then, you know, compared that to then, particularly starting in the tent season here in Melbourne first, which is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And then going from that back to like a Sydney tent season there as well. And the audience kind of reacting to that. One of my main roles with that as well was kind of MC ringmaster, so having mm-hmm. to kind of try and find
hey,
a way
ringmaster.
To... Ah, no, right. I think that's the title of my next show. Boston, US, it was kind of, I guess the language thing was kind of harder, you know, particularly after trying to order a meal one night and then to take mm-hmm. away order for Merck. Yeah, I'm like, who's Merck? I guess that's me, Mark. But I love Boston, I mean, because they don't necessarily are so heavy with their R, so Mark mm-hmm. was easily understood there.
Yep.
Montreal was amazing as well, and then trying to learn my script in Quebecois, I think is the language there, mm-hmm. or the French, you know,
yep.
French mix that they have that way as well, just so that we can kind of pay attention to where we're going in particular,
mm-hmm.
and be respectful of trying to attempt to
connect with that
audience as well.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking, it's an amazing production feat to go from that unsealed dirt roads presenting a show to, you know, like a high end. Because when Circus Oz set up their big top down at Burrung Ma, it's just it is an amazing space to go and visit and you know, to go and check out the show. But yeah, to kind of work on both those levels is quite the feat. But tell us about Corked Up, because it's part of a program which Circus Oz presents. Tell us first about Black Flip.
Oh,
what is that?
Black Flip started 3 years ago. Actually, I was fortunate enough to be one of those people invited to come and participate in at that stage, a one-week workshop intensive,
mm-hmm.
With incredible trainers that they have. And Circus Oz was then at Port Melbourne. They've now since moved to Collingwood into an amazing building, which kind of allows for two different huge training rooms. And, you know, the environment now in Collingwood as well is very incredible to work within.
Mm-hmm.
So it, three years ago, it was particularly, Black Flip, started by Joshua Bond, myself, Kev Krapinery, Sean Chulbra,
mm-hmm.
Ursula Yeo, which just to drop a few names.
Yes, yes.
incredible performers in their own right, you know, coming in for this week-long intensive. We didn't necessarily have a showing at that stage, but a small kind of very informal showing of what we were developing then. But Blackflip was started off in particular to kind of generate more interest from our mob to and availability for them to kind of get into
circus, yeah.
Absolutely, yep. Circus, yeah. Performing, whether they're acrobats. Dale Woodbridge Brown, who's still a current member of the touring show at the moment as well. He's, you know, started off as a dancer, and some of his younger years spent as a gymnast. So now he's one of the acrobats, you know, in the show, amazing trapeze artist, as well as can work that floor. So it's about, Blackflip was about establishing a way for blackfellas to come in, train, then audition for NICA, or even audition for a spot within the Circus Oz
NICA
family
is
as
the
well.
National Institute of Circus Arts.
That's the one, yeah. And so we had one of those from that time to 3 years ago. Jilly, his name is, but he's currently in his second year, studying at NICA as well. And he's actually going to be part of this show as well with an amazing handstand routine, as well as straps.
Yep.
So some aerial work as well.
Wow.
Which is quite, you know, amazing to watch, and particularly seeing Jilly's journey from that kind of training aspect of it all to now him developing specialties in handstand and straps.
Wow. And so what can people expect from, I guess, this Corked Up? Because it's the culmination of the Blackflip Intensive that you've been in town for. But what sort of performances will be shown on the night?
Oh, look, we've got Shirley Hood, who is an amazing stand-up comedian.
Fantastic comedian.
So she's put a... Well, I was going to say one of the main actors, but surprise, Cher, you are the main actor.
Yeah, she is. She's got that ability to just captivate audiences and keep them giggling.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we've got particularly crew from all around Australia, some from New South Wales, Brisbane, Townsville, myself from Mareeba, Shirley, who's kind of from here but based in Melbourne. Based in Canberra. And Tibian Wiles, who was also, he's from Townsville but studies at the Aboriginal Centre for Performing Arts in Brisbane. He's just come off a season with Queensland Theatre Company Black Diggers production as well. Mia Robinson, who was performing in a two-hander for the Melbourne Festival, I believe, or the Fringe Festival that just happened here.
Yep.
Am I right? And also Bakerley, who, sorry, Bakerley, I would try and have a go at your last name, but I might get it wrong, so I'm just going to call you Bakerley, who is one of the Chookie dancers, but he's more from Northern Territory up near Elk Island ways as well, I believe. And so everyone brings their own unique style of performance. And we've got Latina, who's doing one of the tissue acts. And Ali, who's also doing static trapeze. So there's a few aerial acts, but it's all a bit corked up.
And that name, Corked Up, because it's actually an old term from the past. Tell our listeners why Corked Up.
Well, originally Corked Up because we just thought everything can be corked up, whether someone's just being funny, you're corked up now, or whether they're just plain old shouldn't have done that, and that can be corked up. Maybe a little bit hungover and coming in the next day and he's still a bit corked up, and you know that kind of evolution of that of words being like used in that way but taken totally then into another context of meaning within different communities. I guess that's the whole kind of Pidgin English and Creole, where you know the languages then evolved from their derivation, which corked up back in the day, I believe.
When
we first came into rehearsals the first day, and Josh had kind of Googled. Oh, Joshua Bond is the artistic coordinator there with Circus Oz, and he's the one that actually set up the Blackflip initiative. But he Googled it and then found out that it was actually people would just use the cork and kind of, I guess, burn the...
Yeah, they'd burn the end of a cork
and then use that as a kind of the
blackface, like for minstrels or something. Like the ash was used to blacken somebody up. Yeah,
absolutely. So we kind of, that, and now the connotation of it now has taken a completely different meaning, and we're trying to show that within our performances, I guess.
Well, thanks for coming in, Mark, and I just want to say to our listeners, if you could get along to Corked Up, you'll be pleasantly surprised. It starts on the 5th of November this week, and it goes until the 7th, so there's only a couple of shows, three shows in total, actually. It's down on at the Melba Spiegel Tent, which is down in the new Circus Oz space, down near the Keith Haring mural at the old site for the Collingwood TAFE. But tickets are available at www.circusoz.com. Yeah, it's Corked Up. It's part of the Black Flip Intensive. You'll see Mark Shepherd, you'll see Shirley Williams Hood, you'll see the best, biggest mob of Aboriginal people from across Aboriginal Australia. Get down and check it out. Great diversity in shows, great diversity in performances, amazing talent there, yeah?
Yeah, too deadly. And it will be a little bit corked up.
Yeah, well, I hope so, yeah. But thanks for joining us, Mark. It's
pleasure.
Been great.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.